All right.
You're listening to the Harbor Country Radio Network, WRHCLP 106.7 Three Oaks, and WRHZLP 93.5 Three Oaks. Hello, everyone. I'm Enid Goldstein. I'm back. It's been 2 weeks. Oh, my. You're listening to Enid Live on Radio Harbor Country, 106.7 FM, 93.5 FM, RadioHarborCountry.org, and now podcast. Enid Live is podcast, enidlive.podbean, like the beans that you count or eat, .com. Well, I guess nothing's been going on lately. We don't really know what's been going on lately. Well, actually, there have been a few things going on lately, and then a few things that have been going on behind the scenes lately that maybe we haven't been paying as much attention to as we should. Let me get started. The impeachment, I don't know about some of you. A lot of people don't want to listen to it because they get aggravated, or they're disheartened by it, or it's boring to them, or they're not politically engaged. But some of us can't get enough of it. And I guess I'm one of those. And I came to the party late in life because earlier, I think I was not so interested in politics. I don't think I realized how major the role was in politics, and I really wasn't that engaged by it. But if we're looking at a tally, Trump is on his fourth national security advisor. Donald Trump is on his second secretary of state, and he is on his third chief of staff. Now, if you were doing a performance evaluation of an executive, what would that tell you? Anything particular? Some of the people testifying have been so intriguing. Marie Yovanovitch as an ideal of fine public servants. And Fiona Hill was really impressive. And one of the things that she said that I can't get out of my mind is that she was trying to warn us. She's trying to warn us that Trump's campaign on the Ukraine is a dangerous effort by Russia to sow political divisions in the United States and to undercut American diplomacy. So let me give you that again. Here's Fiona Hill, who's saying that, as she testified, the thing that she wanted us to know more than anything is that Trump's pressure campaign on Ukraine is really a dangerous effort by Russia to sow political divisions in the United States and to undercut American diplomacy. This is really important because you have all these fake news sites. You have, in effect, Trump doing the bidding of Russia, in a funny way, a Manchurian candidate. And you have here the New York Times reporting on a former Fox News executive named LaCourt. His name is Ken LaCourt. He's a former Fox News executive who was accused of killing a story about President Trump's affair with Stormy Daniels. He's a Roger Ailes guy, and he's got two websites. And at first glance, you know, they just seem like one is a real conservative website and one is a real liberal website. So the conservative one is called Conservative Edition News, and the other one is called Liberal Edition News, and they have only one thing in common, actually a couple of things in common, but the main thing they have in common is that both have been carefully curated to inflame America's culture wars. He owns both websites. He has hired a bunch of young Macedonians from a kind of a sleepy little riverside town in Macedonia. And he has hired them to churn out disinformation. He hired them during the 2016 presidential campaign in the U.S. And one of the people in his network was a writer who helped peddle a conspiracy theory that Hillary Clinton had ties to a pedophile ring. Remember that? Wasn't it in the pizza joint? And then wasn't somebody killed over that? I think there was. So here is, and you can't, if you try to find out who these people are behind these websites, there are no bylines. The only hint is in the fine print at the bottom of each page, and it says by Bavona Digital Inc., a corporation whose only known address is a Dropbox typically reserved for transient sailors off the San Francisco Bay in Sausalito, California, where I once lived on a houseboat for a long time. Sausalito is very nice. It's right there, right over the bridge from the city, from San Francisco. So here is this guy who now isn't at Fox News anymore. And he has a conservative website and he has a liberal website. And the point of both of those websites is to piss off everybody and to get us into fights with each other. And what has been said is that intentionally or not, these sites are mimicking Kremlin interference in 2016 when Russian operatives used fictitious personas to inflame American discord over Benghazi and over Black Lives Matter. This guy, LaCourte, was one of Roger Ailes' guys, and he served 20 years at Fox before being pushed out in November 2016 as part of the, well, purge, you know, when Roger Ailes was pushed out as well. The whole investment was about $1 million, including about $250,000 of his own money, and he says the rest came from friends and family. And he says he wished he could hire locals, but the Macedonians work a lot cheaper. And so he wants to make money in the Donald Trump fashion of pitting Americans against each other in order to weaken the country, in order to weaken the democracy, and in order to line his pockets. Today, Adam Schiff was quoted as saying that Donald Trump doesn't give a, and here we, I can't use the word because it's not late enough at night, and probably I couldn't use it over the broadcast airwaves. You can use it on cable, but you can't use it over a terrestrial broadcast signal. He doesn't give a, and it's a barnyard epithet that starts, it's a four-letter word starting with S that means poop. He doesn't give a poop about America. He doesn't care about the country. He just cares about himself. And he's willing to sacrifice, Donald Trump is willing to sacrifice this democracy for his own gain. And that really is the point of the impeachment hearings. And that was the point of the warning from Fiona Hill saying he is doing exactly what Russia wants. You know, Russia should be writing him a thank you note. Russia should be writing this Ken LaCourte a thank you note for dividing the country further. And Russia should be writing to Fox News and Breitbart for helping to divide the country even further and to float all these bogus, some of them delusional and really preposterous theories. So here's Frank Rich. Republicans are excusing a criminal conspiracy. And it was interesting to watch the testimony of all these legal scholars. I watched some of it. I didn't watch all of it. I was sort of running around. And then one of them, who's known to be scrappy and let Collins have it, Pam Carlin, she referenced Barron Trump's name, which was nothing. It was a throwaway nothing line. But, of course, the Republicans will seize on anything to be a smokescreen, to be a distraction, to divert. And so George Conway, who can't be in a marital, I don't think they're sleeping together, to put it, he and Kellyanne must not be sleeping together, because when Melania issues this tweet about how this is an invasion of privacy for Barron, George Conway accused Melania Trump of violating Barron Trump's privacy by protesting the 13-year-old boy's name being mentioned at Wednesday's impeachment hearing. He also said that President Trump's supporters were using Barron as a political human shield to excuse what he called the president's many crimes. So here he did. He Here's Melania telling the Stanford law prof, Pamela Carlin, that, quote, a minor child deserves privacy and should be kept out of politics. Meanwhile, the Republicans couldn't exercise his name enough and pound the kid's name because they were depriving him of the very privacy that they were accusing the Stanford law prof of. And then here's George Conway, Kellyanne's husband, saying to Melania in a tweet, so therefore you're amplifying what was a nothing burger reference 100,000-fold? Got it, Conway said. Oh, he's pretty sharp. Maybe he'll be sharp enough not to be. They have four children, he and Kellyanne. What's going to happen to that marriage? Or is this just theatrical in order to sell books? I think it's real. Do you think it's real? You think so? Dr. Judy, our psychologist, she knows. She thinks a marriage has to be over. Well, they're not apparently not spending that much time together. Yes, I guess there it is. And then here's Nancy Pelosi, who did not want to do impeachment. And now there's no way to avoid it. I mean, the facts scream out for it. Regardless of what happens in the Senate, you really do have to act. You can't be transactional on this. And so here it comes, here ambles up to her a reporter from Sinclair, which is just a propaganda outfit, even worse than Fox. And Sinclair owns Channel 22, WSBT in South Bend. So, you know, they force these commentaries on their TV stations. It's a propaganda operation. They had a special relationship with Donald Trump. And here comes one of their reporters for Sinclair. And he approaches her very loudly and he asked her whether she hates Donald Trump, and she wags a finger at him and only a mother of five children could wag at somebody from Sinclair. And she said, don't accuse me. She said, Dan, don't mess with me. She said, I was raised in a Catholic home. I was raised in a way that is a heart full of love, and I always pray for the president. You know, some people are praying for him to drop dead, but I don't think that she is one of those. And she said, and I still pray for the president. I pray for the president all the time. So don't mess with me when it comes to words like that. So she let him have it. So then Trump goes to town on her, calls her Nervous Nancy, having a nervous fit, having a meltdown, you know, as he tweets out about 8,000 tweets a second because he's not nervous. He's...
And then Nancy's response...
Nancy's response is that he's a master at projection, and we don't mean on the silver screen. No. Okay, doctor, you want to explain projection in a microphone so the rest of the people can hear us? And now there's an unauthorized biography of Melania that says that Trump requested she sleeps on the third floor in a different room than he does. But many couples sleep in different rooms, for many reasons. And she has her own glam room where, you know, they make her beautiful, and her own Pilates machine. And he sleeps on the second floor, and he requested a lock on his bedroom door. He probably didn't want Stormy Daniels to run out in a fit of changing her mind. I don't know. These guys. So President Trump can sleep soundly at night knowing that he has a lock on his bedroom door. She sleeps on the floor above him. She thinks that maybe, or suspects that Roger Stone was behind the nude photos of her that suddenly appeared during the campaign. Her husband said, oh, those are fashionable, and they do that in Europe, but there are other people who had darker things to say about those photos. And that Barron speaks with a slight Slovenian accent. I guess he's with his grandparents all the time, her parents. And then when the story hit about Stormy Daniels and our own Karen McDougal from Sawyer, Michigan, that he paid them off. He denied having the affair with them, but he paid them both off. Now, I thought about alleging that I had an affair with him, and I was hoping to get about $150,000 for alleging that I had an affair with him and that I didn't completely expire at the prospect of it. So here is the fact that he pays off these, you know, Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal, And then he and Melania have to go somewhere. So she expresses her anger by doing the thing that he hates women to do. And that is she puts on a pantsuit instead of a dress. A white pantsuit. And then she swats his hand away. So some people think the marriage is transactional, but I wonder whatever gives them that idea. I don't know. In the meantime, while all this is going on, there are other things happening, and we will consider some of those as we continue. You're listening to Enid Live on Radio Harbor Country. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to Enid Live on Radio Harbor Country, 106.7 FM, 93.5 FM, radioharborcountry.org. And Enid Live is now a podcast, so you can listen on demand, enidlive.podbean, and that's BEAN.com. Lots of things going on. I just should let you know, tonight is Art Hop in the Benton Harbor Arts District. Enid Live is rebroadcast Mondays from noon to 1 o'clock. So if you're listening in the Monday broadcast, you've missed it. But tonight is Art Hop in Benton Harbor at the Arts District. It's also the Lighting of the Bluff in St. Joe. It's also the Christmas lights that are going on in Benton Harbor. And I think the Krasl Art Museum has an opening tonight, and the public is always invited, and they're always kind of fun. And there's a lot of festivity in the air. Over Thanksgiving, I hope you had a good Thanksgiving. Trump refused to pardon the White House turkey after accusing it of working for George Soros. That's the Borowitz report. Oh, never mind about that. All right, so here is the Secret Service, which spent $250,000 on Trump's properties in only the first 5 months of his term. So the president has this extraordinary arrangement. He keeps ownership of his businesses, although he's saying he's not running them. And they're being apparently run into the ground by What's his name? Saddam's two sons' names, anyway.
Thing one, thing two.
Okay, so he visits his businesses. He brings all of his aides with him. It gins up big bills for the government. He's not giving it away, and I doubt he's giving the government wholesale prices or prices at cost. But it's at least $250,000, and that's just the Secret Service. There are all kinds of other places that are renting space in Trump Tower, which, by the way, the occupancy rate has gone down, and they're not doing so well at Trump Tower. The executive director of a public interest group says that Donald Trump views the American public as a bunch of marks waiting to be fleeced. Due to his overt self-dealing, he says, and refusal to divest from his sprawling business empire, Donald Trump has turned the American presidency into a racket. Eric Trump, the president's son, one of those running the Trump Organization, has said that the Trump Organization only charges the taxpayer, quote, at cost for federal employees, but has not said more about how that cost is calculated. Previously, other records have shown that taxpayers covered the cost of Trump aides staying in the guest suites at Mar-a-Lago at $546 a night. Is that cost at Mar-a-Lago? $546 a night? Taxpayers also paid a $1,000 liquor tab rung up by Trump aides at the Mar-a-Lago bar.
Well, they were thirsty.
They were thirsty, that's right. It takes it out of you to cover Trump. The Secret Service records released cover only the first 5 months of Trump's terms, during which he made 21 visits to Trump properties. He's made more than 100 additional since that time visits to his properties. And then ProPublica has been investigating Trump's property taxes, and there are a lot of inconsistencies. My God, we are so surprised about that. So they investigated one of his previous buildings, and they found out that there was conflicting information about what Trump files with lenders in order to get refinance and to get more money, and what he files with tax authorities in order to get his taxes lowered. And what do you know? He's doing the same thing at Trump Tower. In the latest case, the occupancy rate of Trump Tower's commercial space was listed over three consecutive years as 11, 16 and 16 percentage points higher in filings to the lender, and he tried to refinance and get more money than what he reported to tax officials. So it's like an old aunt I had that for Social Security purposes, she was 1,000 years old, but for driver's license purposes, she was like 22. So that's Trump. You know, for purposes of lowering his taxes, the building doesn't have any occupants and it's in terrible shape, but for purposes of refinancing, the building is filled up to the brim and it's doing just perky. Trump has much to gain by showing a high occupancy rate to lenders. He refinanced his share of Trump Tower and obtained a $100 million loan on favorable terms. The vast majority of the gap between the occupancy figures can be explained by diverging reports on how much space the Trump Organization used in Trump Tower. So here's what he does. The company said that it used 75,000 square feet in the year that they were assessing it, and that would be about 31% of the building. But then the tax authorities, that was to the lender. To the tax authorities, they said that the company used only 18% of the tower, like about 41,000 square feet. So to the lender, they're saying that, so look at that malleability. And remember when Trump was once deposed about what he thought his properties were worth, he said, well, it just depends on how I feel on any given day, an answer like that. So that's what you have here. And that's what he's doing with Trump Tower. And finally, it's seeing the light of day, but I don't know I don't know whether the lender will say, wait a minute, we want our money back, or if the tax authorities will say, wait a minute, I think you owe us more money. We have no idea. Meanwhile, here is Joe Biden, the 77-year-old candidate who hopes that the no malarkey bus will excite voters. I mean, could they have figured out a better name for the bus under which he could be thrown than the no malarkey bus? It's like an old-fashioned term, but maybe voters, maybe they're appealing to an aging demographic. And let's look a little bit at Joe Biden, which now people think, because Elizabeth Warren's numbers are kind of in sliding, yeah, and not trending in the right direction. Pete Buttigieg has, his numbers are good, but he has a problem with no black support and no Hispanic support, and he's young. And that's a problem. So what are we going to do with him? And then Hillary is allegedly making noises, or they think she's making noises, or pundits who have nothing better to pundit about think that she's making noises on the Howard Stern show that she might jump in. And then you have Joe Biden, and let me just share some information with you, because one of the issues that is up for grabs is student loan debt. And there is a poll that suggests what the winning message is for Democrats. Both Democrats and Republicans both agree on a number of topics. One of them is that college education is too expensive and the states ought to do more to help people afford a college education without getting buried in debt, and that rich families and corporations should pay a lot more in taxes than they do, and that middle-class families should pay less, that people who don't receive health insurance from an employer should be allowed to buy into a public plan, and pharmaceutical companies should be penalized if drug prices increase faster than the rate of inflation, and that we need to increase good jobs with a $1 trillion investment in infrastructure, which would include both roads and expanded production of green energy, and we need to reduce inequality with a 2% wealth tax on net worth in excess of $50 million, which I just barely come in under the wire. Oh, no. I wish. Anyway, so these are the things that both Republicans and Democrats agree need to be done. And these are the things that's being suggested that Democrats could really craft their message and use it to win the election. So here you have Joe Biden, and he has picked up some of this. And among his promises is he will fix the student loan crisis, which saddles 45 million Americans with crippling debt, which now totals $1.5 trillion. And one idea is to allow struggling people to you could discharge your debt with bankruptcy. You used to be able to do that. And then a law was passed that you could not do that. I mean, you are saddled with this debt for the rest of your life. You can't get out of it. And the reason that you're saddled with this debt is that the private student loans were largely stripped of bankruptcy protections in 2005 in a congressional move that tripled this debt over a decade. It was a Republican-led bill. It tightened the bankruptcy code. It unleashed a huge giveaway to lenders at the expense of indebted student borrowers. It faced huge opposition from 25 Democrats in the U.S. Senate, but it passed anyway, with 18 Democratic senators breaking ranks and casting their vote in favor of the bill. Of those 18, one politician stood out as an especially enthusiastic champion of the credit companies who, as it happened, had given him hundreds of thousands of dollars in campaign contributions, and that was Joe Biden. So now, out of one side of his face or mouth, he's making noises about helping students who are in debt. But on the other, he made it impossible for them to really get out of debt or to discharge the debt in bankruptcy. More than 1 million people default on their student loans every year. By 2023, the proportion of borrowers falling behind is expected to reach 40%. Very little discussion about how this monumental disaster came about. How the educational loans borrowed from private financial entities shot up from $56 billion in 2005 to three times that, $150 billion in just 10 years, contributing to an overall student debt burden second in the U.S. only to home mortgages. Earlier this year, Biden tried to justify his backing of the 2005 Act. His spokesperson said that that he knew the bill was going to make it through Congress anyway, and he was trying to, you know, help it do as much as it could. But it is really indisputable that Biden was a strong supporter of that 2005 bill as a whole and of its overall thrust of tightening up the bankruptcy code, largely to the benefit of lenders at the expense of distressed families. And Elizabeth Warren has been on this subject for a long time, and I'll tell you who has opposed Biden strongly on this measure of tightening it up and not allowing for bankruptcy and student loans, and that was Ted Kennedy. He warned that people were dropping out of college because the cost of student loans, they just can't pay them. And now it's even worse than it ever was. And we have Joe Biden to thank not only for not allowing a discharge of these onerous loans through bankruptcy, but we have Joe Biden to thank for Clarence Thomas. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to Enid Live on Radio Harbor Country. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to Enid Live on Radio Harbor Country, 106.7 FM, 93.5 FM, RadioHarborCountry.org. You can get us on Mars and now on demand, EnidLive.podbean.com. All right, so while the impeachment hearings were going on, and by the way, three women have come forward to say that Gordon Sondland put the moves on them. One woman said that Sondland, you know, he was the ambassador to the European Union that was caught in the middle of this Ukraine thing. Three women say they faced sexual misconduct by Gordon Sondland. One woman, who was a work associate at the time, said he exposed himself to her, and not as a Democrat either, at a business during a business interaction. Well, he was giving her the business, wasn't he? And a third woman, 27 years his junior, met him to discuss a potential job. She said he pushed himself against her, kissed her. She shoved him away, and amazingly enough, the job help stopped. No more job. The job he was trying to recruit her for was one apparently she wasn't interested in. So, all right, Gordon Sondland. So what's been happening while all this impeachment was going on? And by the way, I think that was a ProPublica investigation of Gordon Sondland. Has a lot of juicy details in it. You might want to look it over. All right, so here is another to the federal bench. Here is the latest of President Trump's confirmed federal judges, and he's put a number of them in place, dozens and dozens of federal judges, and they are pathetic. This is a woman, Sarah Pitlick. Her claim to fame was that she clerked for now Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh. The American Bar Association says that she is not qualified. She got a not qualified rating from the ABA because she has never tried a case or led as co-counsel. Let me start again. And her name again is Sarah Pitlick. The Bar Association said that Ms. Pitlick has never tried a case as lead or co-counsel, whether civil or criminal. She has never examined a witness. Though she did argue one case in a court of appeals, she has never taken a deposition. She has not argued any motion in a state or federal trial court. She has never picked a jury. She picked her nose, but she never picked a jury. She has never participated in any stage of a criminal matter. And she is now going to be a federal judge in Missouri. And her anti-choice position puts her, you know, I think Missouri has maybe one abortion clinic left. And she has made a lot of, she has argued that surrogacy is harmful to mothers and children and is a practice society should not be enforcing. Her position is that states should treat embryos like humans, which would likely outlaw abortion, in vitro fertilizations, and surrogacies. So that is what we think is going to happen with her. Also, what has happened while we were involved in the impeachment hearings is that hundreds of thousands of people are losing access to food stamps. The Trump administration, which has brushed aside tens of thousands of protest letters, gave final approval this week to a rule that will remove nearly 700,000 people from the federal food stamp program by strictly enforcing federal work requirements. Now, remember, some people have no transportation. Some people can't, you know, in some places, everything is depressed and you can't even get a job. The rule is the first of three Agricultural Department efforts to scale back the food stamp program. So far, the Trump administration officials appear unmoved by the protests flooding in. More than 140,000 public comments were submitted on the rule that was made final this week, and they were overwhelmingly negative. So here's another. The department also proposed a rule that would close what it calls a loophole that allows people with incomes of up to 200% of the poverty level, which would be about $50,000 for a family of four, to receive food stamps. It would also prevent households with more than $2,250 in assets or $3,500 for a household with a disabled adult from receiving food stamps. These changes would strip nearly 3 million people of their benefits, and nearly 1 million children would lose automatic eligibility for free or reduced price school meals. This proposal received 75,000 negative public comments, and it didn't matter. It didn't matter what the public comments were. If the Agriculture Department finalizes all these three rules, nearly 4 million people would have lost food assistance if they had done it about a year ago. The change is expected to shave nearly $5.5 billion from food stamp spending over the 5 years. You know, as somebody who has lived off the federal government, and that's what Trump has done, his father before him, it's really interesting that they're trying to, at the lowest rungs, trying to prevent people from having any kind of food security. And then while we were busy with impeachment, the Democrats just extended the Patriot Act for about three more months. They slipped something into a bill. It may seem that Americans were entirely consumed by impeachment and that no other important business was getting done, except that a Democratic leader slipped into a bill that would be a continuing resolution to prevent a government shutdown and forestall a debate about border wall funding. They slipped into a bill, a three-month extension of the Patriot Act, the post 9/11 law that gives the federal government sweeping surveillance and search powers and circumvents traditional law enforcement rules. So all of that happened while we were busy, unable to stop watching the impeachment hearings. So where's Fred Upton on all of this? Well, the AP did a big piece on Fred Upton. For more than 30 years and under five presidents, Republican Fred Upton easily won re-election to his Southwest Michigan House seat by promoting, quote, common sense values and bipartisan accomplishments. So what's going to happen now? How is he going to walk the line? There's no joy in Mudville, Upton said in a September statement. His chief opponent is John Hoadley, Kalamazoo, who has already raised $525,000, double the amount that Matt Long John raised at this time when he ran, but Upton has raised twice that. He's got almost $1 million for his campaign fund. What we've heard year after year from these voters is good old Fred, he's a good guy, he's okay by me. But the question is that going to be enough? John Hoadley is 36 years old and likes to mention that he was three when Upton was first elected to Congress. A lot of people are coming from all over the place. One woman, Marge Halperin, who's a leader of the Chicago chapter of Indivisible, a progressive organization, was one of more than a dozen people who traveled to our area, southwestern Michigan, last week to push for Democrats and progressives in the next election. The group knocked on more than 600 doors to identify voters, to provide information about Michigan's new law allowing absentee voting for all registered voters. Democrats reinforce the idea that Upton isn't really the moderate he says that he is, and also the push from the Chicago people knocking on our doors here in Michigan were to remind people that the new law in Michigan allows absentee voting for all registered voters, no matter what age you are. Just like California, you don't have to have an excuse. The thing that I want to share with you, because as the election heats up and you have issues of Medicare for all, is the Washington Post is revealing in one of its investigations that all these op-ed pieces that you have been seeing in the newspaper about what a bad idea Medicare for all would be, and some of them were allegedly authored by Democrats and how this would cost too much money, they were in fact authored by the lobbyists for the insurance industry, the pharmaceutical companies. They're the ones writing this. And there are a lot of lawmakers, usually at the state level, who are putting their names on these op-ed pieces. So again, it's Russia's wet dream come true that we are at odds with each other. This is opinion being manipulated. You remember when they were investigating Paul Manafort, all these pro-Ukrainian kinds of op-ed pieces that appeared in the paper, all of them were engineered. They were all fake. They really were fake news. So lobbyists either helped draft or made extensive revisions to opinion columns published by three state lawmakers in a way that warned against the dangers of Medicare for all. So it warned that Medicare for all would be a problem. And it warned that that any other government involvement in health care would be a problem. And this is according to emails that were obtained by the Washington Post. So here you have a Partnership for America's Healthcare Future. It's a multi-million dollar industry group founded in 2018 and funded by hospitals, private insurers, drug companies, and other private healthcare operators. So here are lobbyists. They're trying to bend public opinion away from an idea that has really seized the imagination of Americans. And in the Affordable Health Care Act, so many people have benefited. And what it has done is, even if you weren't part of the Affordable Health Care Act, the raise of your insurance premiums was lowered. The raise wasn't as high because so many people were covered under the Affordable Care Act that the rest of us benefited as well. The Partnership for America's Healthcare Future, which is a group of lobbying organizations, insurance companies, or so forth, has spent more than $1 million on TV ads since August warning about Medicare for all. So I want you to be aware of it. It is why we have to, you know, find independent, trusted news sources and stay engaged. Read the newspapers, read them online. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to Enid Live on Radio Harbor Country.
Sleigh bells ring. Are you listening? In the lane, snow is glistening, a beautiful sight. We're happy tonight, walking in a winter wonderland. Gone away is the bluebird, here to stay is a new bird. He sings a love song as we go along, walking in a winter wonderland. In the meadow we can build a snowman, then pretend that he is Parson Brown. He'll say, are you married? We'll say, no man, but you can do the job when you're in town. Later on, we'll conspire as we dream by the fire to face unafraid the plans that we made, walking in a winter wonderland. Pretend that he's a circus clown. We'll have lots of fun with Mr. Snowman until the other kiddies knock him down. When it snows, ain't it thrilling?
I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to Enid Live on Radio Harbor Country, 106.7 FM, 93.5 FM, RadioHarborCountry.org. Now podcast on demand, Enid Live at podbean.com. And a little change of pace because we're in the holiday season. So we need some relief from impeachment. And what better way to relieve ourselves from impeachment than to eat or to think about eating or to make something good to eat. And joining us is Marlena Spieler, who's here from London. And Marlena, we've been having some welcome to Enid Live. What? We're having a little bit of technical difficulty. I can hear you. Oh, I'm not hearing it. I'm so sorry, Marlena. Everybody else can hear you, but I'm having a hard time hearing you. So we were talking about tomatoes because you're what, one cute tomato?
A bunch just straight from the can. They're really good. I mean, they're just really good. No salt.
No salt and no...
On the ones that we, tasted. We're making spaghetti and we're going a little bit
crazy. Well, wait a minute. You were going to...
I made meatballs with turkey. So turkey meatballs. And a big pasta fagioli.
Oh, it sounds wonderful. But wait a minute. We heard we have local tomatoes, but not right now. Yeah. Why is this an improvement over American canned tomatoes?
Well, okay, they don't have a... First of all, where do I start? They're so delicious. Now, that's not saying American tomatoes aren't delicious, too, because I know they are, or they can be. But there's an overseeing, like, body that oversees and controls the from the planting to the seeds to the growing to the way the workers are treated. And it's all really important because it's part of the European
and
heritage.
And they're not genetically modified.
Processing, the canning, and even though it's very high tech, it's still just like the grandmas are still making in the backwoods. And so they're technologically they're delicious.
Marlena, can you hear me?
What? Yeah.
Okay. One of the things that I saw in Consumers Reports yesterday, actually, and it was a big surprise to me, was that canned tomatoes get you more of the lycopene, which is considered an anti-cancer mm-hmm. part of tomatoes, than fresh tomatoes do. It's really kind of counterintuitive. And the other thing is, in American tomatoes, I don't know if we've got a lot of additives sometimes, and I think there are some tomatoes that they're messing with, genetically modified. They put little fish fish genes in them.
Oh, no. And that's forbidden in Europe.
Okay.
Forbidden. And, also there's different types. And, like, for instance, I just made a sauce using the pomodorini, which are the little like cherry tomatoes, okay. But we've all had our fingers in just picking out tomatoes. Oh, we're going to start a Facebook page because we're all so excited. No. So, in fact, someone called her daughter and said, yeah, let's make a tomato page.
Wait a minute, aren't you?
And we decided, we did a radio show this morning, and we decided, let's become the Tomato Sisters.
Wait a minute.
And Enid, if you want to join us, you totally are our tomato sister.
Well, wait a minute. As you know, any recipe I could contribute is a recipe for disaster. Marlena's last cookbook.
Okay, because all you need to do is eat and admire tomatoes.
Yeah, yes, yes.
And come with us to the fields of tomato land, where really it's so inspiring and it's so delicious. Small family farms.
One of the things that I had when I was in Europe.
You are so right about the studies being done about the lycopene. And it just keeps, the reports keep getting better and better.
Marlena, can you hear me? Because I'm having a hard time butting in and interrupting you like I'd like to do. One of the things I had in Italy, which was surprising, is tomato ice cream. And I see recipes for tomato cheesecake. And I know that you did a tomato sorbet. So we know
what we don't realize
is
called The Taste of Naples.
Yeah.
And inspired by tomato gelato and tomato sorbetto that I ate in Campania near Naples, inspired by that, I made a sorbetto of tomatoes and vanilla. And it's delicious. I mean, eat it with some vanilla ice cream and maybe a candied basil leaf next to it. And it's so good.
Well, it's kind of even, you know what?
I worked up a recipe for tomato cheesecake because the tomato people were saying, let's do this. Maybe people will like it. They probably never thought of it before. And, it was good. I put basil leaves in the, graham cracker crust.
It worked really well. It is that you are not convincing anybody in this studio because everybody is rolling their eyes. They're saying, what? Tomato sorbet? Tomato cheesecake? I don't know. But I do know. I can verify what Marlena is saying. Tomato
refreshing.
Ice cream was really
tomato
good.
Tomato desserts are really refreshing.
Well, it's a fruit, which we have forgotten that it's a fruit, rather than the vegetable that we consider it to be. Tell us, with the holidays coming up and all this, you're in the middle of, because you live in London most of the time, you're in the middle of all this, you've got Trump light there with Boris Johnson and all this Brexit stuff going on.
All I want to do, I swear, when I get back, I'm like, because I sort of view tomato dishes, spaghetti with tomatoes, as a detox dish. I make it, I feel better. And I just have this feeling with the election coming up that I'm just going to walk into the kitchen, past the television, past the radio reports, past my husband listening to it, and I'm just going to walk in the kitchen, make spaghetti with tomatoes, sit down with my dogs and say, it's going to be okay, doggies. And they love it as well. They love spaghetti with tomatoes, and we're just going to sit there and like, okay.
Well, that's the recipe. Then tomato, curiously enough, is pretty much the color of Donald Trump's hair. So right away, there's a correspondence there. And maybe that's what we should be doing, having spaghetti parties. You know, I just looked up the Marcella Hazan recipe for the easiest and one of the best spaghetti sauces. And Marlena confirmed this. It's tomatoes. It's about 2 pounds of tomatoes. It's a quarter of a stick of butter. It's and that's pretty much it. An onion, you cut it in half. And then when you're finished, you know, simmering all of this, you throw away the onions. You discard the onions.
Really, I suggest eating it.
Yeah, I would too. Well, it says discard it from the sauce.
Now, the thing is, with that canned tomatoes, I mean, I don't know what she calls for in the recipe, but I can tell you that, in fact, canned tomatoes. I mean,
that would do it.
She'd have a million fresh ones, and they're super, super right.
Are we going to be able to get these canned Italian tomatoes? San Marzano's, you can actually get at Costco, and they're really good. And their denomination, what do you call it? A denominational kind of a thing? They can only be grown, be called San Marzano. They can only be grown in a certain part of what, Campania?
Well, San Marzano's are fascinating, and we would need to do a whole other program about San Marzano's. They are, you cannot have a San Marzano tomato unless it's grown in a certain area, which is the area around Sarno at the foot of Vesuvio, Mount Vesuvio, and it's got the right weather, it's got the right soil, which is, volcanic. And it's got heritage, it's got, you know, generations upon generations of people who've been growing it ever since the mayor or the prime minister of Peru, the ambassador of Peru, brought these little seeds from the Peruvian jungle. So it's just, if you can grow, if you have the seeds, you can grow them someplace, but they're not going to be San Marzano. They're going to be different. All fruits and vegetables are like that, but some more so.
Marlena, thank you so much for joining us. I could talk tomatoes with one wonderful tomato, Marlena Spaler. Her latest book is what, A Taste of Naples? We're just about out of time. Thank you so much for telling us all about tomatoes.
Oh, thank you for having me, Enid. And I'll come back and talk San Marzano if you like.
Oh, and bring some spaghetti with you, will you?
Oh,
we could
I'm stuffing it down the phone line right now because it is good.
She's the most fabulous.
I'm surrounded by people eating spaghetti right now.
Thank you, Marlena.
I like it.
Marlena Spieler, who has written A Taste of Naples. She's written dozens of cookbooks. She's really good. She really knows her stuff. Written for the New York Times, written for the San Francisco Chronicle, and internationally recognized, and is now telling us all about tomatoes. Thank you, everybody. This was really a group effort today. We're not used to having guests on, and we have a fairly primitive system here. But, you know, David Nash made it work. Dr. Judy, you made it work. Thank you so much for underwriting Enid Live. Randy Hill, you made it work. And thank you, Randy Hill and Joan Hill, for underwriting the broadcast version of Enid Live. Art Hop tonight in downtown Benton Harbor. It's getting a little bit nippy. Stay warm. Make something tomato-y and wonderful. And I will see you back here next Friday, 4 to 5 p.m. on Enid Live and Radio Harbor Country.